Welcome to The Lobbying Show, a podcast about the people in government relations, how they got into it, what their jobs entail, what works, and what doesn't. I'm your host, Jim O'Brien. Welcome back to another episode of The Lobbying Show. Before we get to today's guest, let me give you some very exciting news. We are going to have our first ever Lobbying Show podcast event. We are going to do a live interview with two senior government affairs professionals from Ease, the cannabis delivery company. We're going to do the interview at the Denton's Law Office. It's going to be a lunch event on Friday, November 8th. Space is limited, and you can purchase tickets by looking in the show notes. There'll be a link to the Eventbrite site where you can go and purchase tickets. And we are very excited about this. We're excited to sit down with Ease, the company, and hear about all that they're doing. And we'll have some Q&A, and we'll have some lunch. And it's just a great opportunity for fans of the show and past guests to come together for our first ever event. So hopefully we'll see a lot of you on Friday, November 8th. And then today we are going to sit down and talk to Jeff Allen from Echo Ridge. Echo Ridge is a startup company, and Jeff is the founder and CEO, and they've had a couple of different variations, but where they are now is creating a platform where everyday Americans can come together on an issue and hire a lobbyist if they choose and get engaged. And so Jeff talks a little bit about his history and the history of Echo Ridge and where they plan to go in the future. So it's very interesting, another one of these new startups in the lobbying space, in the tech space. And it's a very interesting conversation. So without further ado, here is Jeff Allen. So Jeff, tell us about Echo Ridge.
Echo Ridge is a venture capital-backed startup, which I founded back in 2016. I was looking for a way to empower individuals to take advantage of all the tools that big money uses in politics. And of course, one of those is lobbying. And I wanted to figure out how we can—
I was going to say, you do know the name of the show is The Lobbying Show, right? We're here for lobbyists. But anyway, go ahead.
But that's good because, you know, that's—
all lobbyists use— right.
That's right. As an aside, I often tell people outside of this realm that, you know, lobbyists are not good or bad, even though the reputation is often attached to them that they're the evil big money. But the reality is a lobbyist is a professional doing a job. Now it's the side that hires them that's good or bad. And that's kind of what you have to think about. And so that's what I was trying to think about, is how can we put lobbyists to work for more individual political activism, issue-based activism. And that's how—
to give tools to everyday Americans to engage their state or local governments.
That's
or federal.
Correct. Yes.
And so you have this platform called the Nation Crowd. Is that what it's called?
That's right. Nation Crowd is our consumer activism platform.
And so there's three, from what I took from your website, which I would encourage our listeners to go check out for Echo Ridge. It's kind of an empowering tool for grassroots. And although you just said it would empower everyday Americans, which I think is what it's, as you said, what it's made for, and which is great, it's also something that lobbyists could also, in my opinion, probably use and or get hired from, because you have three parts. You have the social part, which you can tell us about all three of these parts, but you have the social part where people come together, they get energized around an issue. Then you have, they decide to raise some money and get some funding. That's the second part. And the third part is they take that funding and can engage a lobbyist or engage whatever they want to do. That's kind of a summary of what Echo Ridge is, right?
That's correct, yes.
So why don't you break those down as to how that works? It's a really interesting, unique tool that you've created.
Thank you. So I'll start in order, basically, because it is sequential. So we do have this social part of what we're doing. And by social, what we mean is, if you're familiar with Slack, it's along the lines of, it's a collaboration tool that allows people, like-minded people, to come together and to organize these grand ideas they have into something that's actionable. So early on, I was informed by one of my friends in the lobbying field who deals with a lot of grassroots. She said, Jeff, people come to me all the time and they go, from the grassroots side, we want to lobby. And she goes, great, what do you want to lobby? And they go, we want to make the world a better place. And that's a really tough, you know, legislative ask, right? But when you make the world a better place and turn it into something like, we want to mandate biannual testing for water pollution so that everyone in this city has access to clean water, it now becomes something that we can pursue from the policy point of view. So ultimately, our goal is to bring people together and get them to organize at that level so that they can have something that's actionable. And once they have that, they then move into the phase of crowdfunding. It looks like Kickstarter from many respects, except instead of going out there and crowdfunding a business idea or some type of project, what you're doing is a political initiative. And this means you have the ability to take small money and turn it into something that really has the opportunity to equal and neutralize the influence of big money. And that's kind of been the gem of crowdfunding from a business venture capital point of view. And I think it's high time we turn it into something that can be used from a political point of view. Before we created this, though, there was no option for that because the current existing entities like Kickstarter, GoFundMe, Indiegogo, and so on aren't set up in a way where they can deal with political issues. And so what we've done is created that structure so that it's actually possible now.
And then the third phase of that is where the group could actually engage a lobbyist.
Correct. So the marketplace allows these newly formed, newly funded ad hoc political groups to go out there and engage with lobbyists, either at the state or the federal level, and use that money they've now raised for their political initiative. And this is how the entire ecosystem works together.
So can you give us an example, either real life or just made up?
Sure. So I would say one of the things that we've been working on during our beta program, which has shown a lot of success, is paid family leave. And it's a good cause in the sense that it is bipartisan. There's agreement on the left and the right that paid family leave is something that needs to be done. The problem has come with the implementation of it. So for example, in DC right now, Senators Gillibrand and Rubio both have competing proposals for paid family leave in the Senate. However, Gillibrand's proposal is to set up an agency, something that looks like the Social Security Administration, for example, that handles this. And then there's a new payroll tax created. On the other hand, Rubio, he would like to tap into the current Social Security system. And essentially, how do you say they want to, if you want to take 4 weeks of paid family leave, it's basically added on to the time that you need to wait until you retire and start collecting Social Security. So both of those proposals have their merits and certainly they have their weaknesses. However, the important thing is that both sides do agree that they want to do something in paid family leave. So now we've taken this a step further because New Hampshire at the moment is in the process also of debating that same thing. And we've come across a particular proposal from the current governor, Sununu, who would like to implement something with paid family leave in the state that looks like short-term disability insurance, where the insured pool becomes the state employees. This benefit is given to them as part of their package. And now you have 10,000 within your insurable pool, and private businesses can opt in then to this pool so that they can start doing it with the goal of making the paid family leave program accessible to private businesses for less than $20 per month per employee, right around that range. And the problem is, though, that he's now up against a Democratic-controlled legislature. And because of that, he is having some trouble navigating that. And so we've had backers of that plan get on our platform and start to create an initiative that is a mix of individual activists. It is a mix of associations that have some vested interest in this. For example, the insurance industry has definitely got a lot to gain if this passes. So the Brokers and Agents Association of the state has now come to us in support of this, and they want to help organize it. They want to help donate to it. But then you've got the individual activists from many sectors, whether it be small business, whether it be other types of unions that exist up there that are fully on board with this. And we're starting to see a coalescence around what's happening and a real movement start to develop. And they've started to raise the money for it, and they're seeing a great amount of success. Their hope is if they can do this in New Hampshire and get it passed, then they can actually scale it up to the federal level as well.
And about how many different members are there in this group?
Within the group right now, if I had to kind of guess because I haven't looked in a little while.
A few hundred or something.
It's actually probably less than 100 at the moment. I would say closer to between 60, 70.
Okay. And have they gone into the funding phase of it?
They have, actually, they have. Yes.
Okay.
And they've started to gain traction there as well.
Okay. And so, and then after they got to a critical mass of funding, they would then potentially go to the engagement phase where they would hire a lobbyist. So is there a leader of this group who, if they engage a lobbyist obviously always reports to a client, and typically a person, if you're working for a company or a nonprofit, you're reporting to a person at that client. If the lobbying firm gets hired under this platform, who would they report to?
So in this case, the causes, as we call them internally, are structured in a way that they elect a committee. And that committee has particular representatives who are responsible for certain things. You have your chairperson, you have your treasurer, you have those type of people. In this case, the committee is making decisions on behalf of the membership of the cause. And ultimately, the lobbyist is working with them.
For the committee.
For the committee, correct, yes.
Okay. Interesting. And so it's in the beta phase now and getting ready to roll out?
It is in beta, and we are looking to start rolling it out here very soon, actually, because the beta has gone well. And we are expecting by later fall, you'll see it live.
Okay, great. And so how did Echo Ridge come to be?
So a little bit of background about myself is that 5 or so years ago, I started to work with a company called Lottery.com out of San Francisco, typical Silicon Valley startup, lots of cash, not a lot of people. They asked me if I could handle business development for them and help them roll out to market. As I started to get more engrossed in my role, I began to realize that this was not business development. This was definitely government relations because everything I did was related to changing the landscape of the U.S. lottery laws, which are done at the state level. And so I would go around to the 42 states that had lotteries and try to convince the governor and the AG and the legislature that it's a good idea that they go with mobile as a way to sell lottery tickets. And the more I did that, the more I needed to enlist the aid of lobbyists. To a point, we had one of the largest operations out of Silicon Valley. We covered 35 states. We had federal. And at the time, I think it was about 50 lobbyists, contract lobbyists, who were working on my team just on government relations. And so we started to get pretty good at what we did. By the time I left, we had opened up in 7 states, which was 6 more than any other competitor had ever done. And then I think ultimately what started to happen was our competitors would just wait for us to open up a state, and then they would go in after us because we did all the heavy lifting. But we were very skilled at it. And
who were your competitors?
Our competitors, I don't want to call them out on here just because they number one, lobby, and also that I'm still sort of friendly with them.
Okay.
But they know who they are. However, when I started to become good at what I was doing, I started to be bothered by the fact that Jeff Allen, representative of big industry, big business, had quite the sway and the pull within, you know, state houses. But Jeff Allen, private citizen, the person electing the people to represent me, didn't have that same level. And so I wanted to figure out how we could kind of shift the balance a little, or at least level the playing field. And that is ultimately where Echo Ridge came from.
And so how many years were you at? You said 5 years?
Well, I was at Lottery, I think, four years at Lottery.
Okay.
And I left last year, last October, and to go full-time with Echo Ridge.
Okay. And let's go a little bit more back in your career. What did you do before you were at Lottery.com?
So I spent a significant portion of my time overseas in Asia where I was an expatriate. I worked within...
So it says here you were in Tokyo, Indonesia, and Singapore.
Yes, I was. A total of 15 years overseas.
And before you get into that, how did you end up overseas?
So without giving away the ending, I guess I was bored. I was a newly graduated college student, and I decided to go explore the world. And then when I was over there, I realized I needed money to live. And so I got a job in the IT industry. And that's sort of how I became involved in the IT industry over there.
Okay. So anyway, so getting back to your job. So you're in Tokyo?
Yes.
Okay.
And I was in Tokyo working for a consulting firm called IOCubed. IOCubed's specialization was helping increase valuations of tech startups by assisting with market expansion internationally. And so being something of a specialization of mine, that was where I really put my efforts, was making them the most valuable they could be by helping them get into foreign markets and do it successfully.
Okay. And so how long were you in each of these places?
I was in Japan for 5 years, in Singapore for 3, and Indonesia for 7.
Okay. And you also worked for a time while you're there for IBM and SAP?
Yes. My time in Singapore was spent working with SAP and IBM, and they were sort of the first really big roles that I had within the IT industry. And I was heading business development up for Asia Pacific for those companies out of Singapore.
Okay. And you're Marine Corps?
Yes, I am a former Marine.
Okay. Where'd you serve?
Well, I was based out of Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. I was a Marine infantry assault man during the original Gulf War era.
Okay.
And so I did that for a few years before getting out and entering the civilian life again. And it was a good start. Certainly gave me a lot of discipline and a lot of capability to persevere and necessary within the Silicon Valley world.
And you did that right after college?
I actually did that before college.
Right before college.
Yes.
Okay.
And then I started college while I was a Marine, and I got out and I finished up. I had 2 years left after that, so I finished up my last 2 years before going to Asia.
And you went to University of North Dakota?
Yes.
And you're now getting a graduate degree or PhD?
Yes, I'm working. So right now I'm approaching the point where they're going to award me my master's in forensic psych. I am doing a blended program where I have to show up for specific things at the university's campus, but otherwise I can do most of my work and my research off campus.
Okay. Wow. You do you sleep?
I do. And it's surprising given I have 2 teenage daughters as well.
Oh,
and so that definitely is another whole aspect of my life, and it keeps me busy.
Wow. All right. So that's a little background on you. Now, getting back to Echo Ridge. So what has it been like to build a company from scratch? I mean, this is really your first venture doing this. You've been affiliated with, you know, tech and very familiar with Silicon Valley and that whole industry or approach. What has it been like for you founding your own company?
That is a good question. And certainly it's something that I often reminisce on as I think about how I get into this. As you said, I've been involved with startups in Silicon Valley for many years now, but I've always been one of the team members who brought a specialization to the team. This is the first time I've served as the CEO. And I have to say, it's not a job I envy people having. It's not something I ever gravitated towards. I always enjoyed business development. I was just happy doing that. But I realized with what we were doing with Echo Ridge, I had a specific vision, and I was the only person who could really bring it to market, to bring it to the point when investors would trust enough to invest in it. And so ultimately, I had to step up and take on the CEO role. And it is very nerve-wracking, I'll say that. It's you're thinking about many aspects of the company, the product, the market fit, raising money for investment, making sure your employees get paid, everything that goes along with that. So I've certainly started to sleep less since becoming CEO. I definitely find myself sleep at night thinking about things like, what if we did this? Or how am I going to pitch this investor? Or how many payroll taxes do I owe? And things like that, that just, you know, I didn't used to think about at all.
How many employees do you have now?
We currently have 8 employees, 2
wow.
contractors, and occasionally we have up to 5 interns. An important note there is we were incubated out of Dartmouth, and we still have a very close relationship with Dartmouth. And so we end up working with the university, or actually the college, a lot. Mm-hmm. And they send us interns as well as other types of resources to help us along.
It's a small college, but there are those that love it, as they say. And so does the company look very different now, the product, than how you first envisioned it or what your first idea was?
It does, in the sense that we've scaled back, or we've rethought the way that we wanted to do social. So bringing people on board to kind of coalesce around ideas. Initially, my vision was more like Facebook. We had an open sort of platform social network. And that's how we built it in the prototype also, mm-hmm. where they come in, you know, and they get together organically.
So do you code also?
I do, actually, yes.
And so in the beginning, you're actually sitting with you and a few colleagues or friends coding, creating this?
For the original code and the original prototype, I created it myself.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, so for the first 6 months, 12 months of Echo Ridge, whatever it was called back then, you're basically just coding.
Yes, correct.
Okay, sorry, go ahead.
So I envisioned something again that looked a little more like Facebook, but then I realized if you just leave people to their own devices like that and don't give them direction, they'll do nothing. And so when we thought about it again, we realized it was not Facebook, it was Slack that we wanted to be. We wanted to be more of a productivity collaboration tool that drove productivity in a way. And that's kind of how we realigned ourselves and how we redid the social portion of what we're doing. And then the second part of it was, and this started to show its head early on, but I probably didn't recognize it early enough. I was actually down in D.C. when Maggie Hassan was getting sworn in, and I'm hanging around, and there's a bunch of people coming up. And so what do you do for work? And I was like, well, I do this over at lottery.com, but I'm also starting this startup that does this. And these people would say, that's fascinating, and hand me a business card and say, we're from this nonprofit. When you launch, can you contact us? And so I started to realize that it wasn't just individuals, but rather there was this entire segment of the nonprofit world that didn't have the sophistication of the massive nonprofits like Sierra or those type of really activist type groups where they had a dual C3, C4 structure. And we were able to bring something to the table in the form of a turnkey platform that allowed them to engage in that level of issue activism and do so, I think, a lot easier, cheaper, and bring expertise, I guess, that they didn't have in-house. And so the platform is equal parts individual activist as it is small nonprofit, trade union, a bunch of other type of groups like that where they get together for these ad hoc campaigns. I probably can't talk about any specific organizations, but I can tell you now that there are two larger C3 organizations at the moment that are preparing to launch fairly massive campaigns on the platform, but they're outside of what they're normally able to do as a C3 without risking their nonprofit status. So they're using our C4 mechanism that we have built into the platform to be able to kind of undertake a lot more in the run-up to the 2020 election.
But political campaigns can't use your site.
They can't. We stay away from that because of the complexities of the finance laws surrounding
it. Right. And private business.
Private business, they do not use, though. This is something I hadn't touched on, but we have segmented the marketplace portion of the platform where we allow businesses to come in there directly and to be able to engage with lobbyists. We call that portion of the platform, the marketplace alone, we call Retain.
Okay.
And Retain does allow businesses to come in there to engage lobbyists, to manage lobbying relationships, to do payments, to do bill tracking and things like that without needing to go through the other part, the consumer-oriented part, the activism piece of it. So we do have that capability and we are piloting it now.
So you have two platforms, essentially. I mean, I know it's the same platform, but there's a Chinese wall between the two of them.
Correct.
Okay, interesting. So a company may decide to use Echo Ridge or your platform to figure out which lobbyists they want to hire in a various state or at the federal level on an issue and almost use it as an RFP platform.
That's correct. So we now have 40 lobbying platforms on the marketplace across various states, and we have 9 organizations that don't fall under that activist type profile. Mm-hmm. They're more traditional lobbying clients. Mm-hmm. And so those 9 organizations are using us specifically for managing the payment relationship as well as the, I would call it the project management aspect of what they're doing. Hmm. And the lobbyists are benefiting because, of course, they're gaining exposure to new potential markets and clients through a platform where we're actually going out there proactively selling the services. Mm-hmm. One of the nice things about lobbying, which of course differs with the practice of law, is you can't go out and solicit clients with practicing law, right? You can in the lobbying world, of course, go out and make the hard sell. And so we're happy to take that role on when we're going out there. And so we are currently doing that. And that's going quite well, actually. Retain has been seeing a lot of success to the point where more lobbying firms are asking to be involved with the beta currently.
Hmm. And then how do you get paid?
So in the case of a referral, there is a referral fee there that we take. But how we would normally do it is a 1% fee put on the invoice. So $5,000 invoice becomes a $50 transactional fee for us.
Okay. Well, I think, you know, it's interesting getting hired by the group. That's a whole new approach. Very interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And I also think you're very wise to have the two platforms. Are there competitors? I can think of one similar type of group. Do you have competitors on the private company side?
We don't, because I'm sure you guys are aware that, you know, in the lobbying world, typically Excel and QuickBooks Pro are sort of the go-to financial management invoicing tools.
Yeah.
And so what we're providing is more akin to a SaaS service.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, we have this aspect of client development. So I often, and not everyone will be familiar with this, but I often describe it to investors as very, very similar to Aspen Dental, if you're familiar with them.
Yes.
Aspen is a dental business with 600 locations across the United States, but they don't own a single dental practice because most state laws prohibit non-dentists from owning dental practices. What they do is just completely manage the back office, the sales, the marketing. And that's kind of what we're trying to do on the lobbying side so that we can take away the need to worry about sales, marketing, running a business, payroll taxes, and all that nonsense, and let the lobbyists focus on lobbying. And that's kind of what we're bringing there to that. But and then from the client point of view, and I used to experience this also, was, you know, I was moving at such a fast pace, adding new states on all the time. And when I needed to go to a state where I didn't know anyone and I needed to hire a lobbyist, it was essentially me Googling best lobbyists in Minnesota. And that's not exactly the most reliable way to do it. So I felt the pain too. But then I also, as a client, was a little bit underwater when I would get 35 different invoices every month with 35 different due dates and ways to pay it and so on. And so I wanted a little bit of order brought to that. And, you know, we didn't create it like that initially. We created it as part of Nation Crowd. But then when we looked at it and we said, you know what, this could be a standalone thing on its own. Mm-hmm. And Errol, the lobbyist, among our beta cohort, they were very excited about it. They're like, oh my God, yeah, this is like, you know, this is something that's never been done because no one's ever really targeted the lobbying industry, which is sad because it's 11,000 lobbyists across the U.S. There was $3.5 billion spent on lobbying last year, and no one's really addressing the market at all.
There's 11,000 across the U.S. and there's 11,000 in D.C. So, so if for a lobbying firm, so walk us through, let's say a lobbying firm comes to you and wants to sign up and have you do all that. What responsibilities do you take over for the lobbying firm?
So we've been working on increasing what we can do, but ultimately our core products from a technology point of view are that we automate the billing process so that we can offer an auto pay feature where lobbying firms sign on with their clients. The client opts into auto pay. The lobbyist extends a 3% discount, but they get paid the same day they invoice, which is something we're trying to improve cash flow. Mm-hmm. The second part is we've gamified the system in a way that when invoices go overdue for those who are not on auto pay, we basically start hounding the client, not in a very, you know, aggressive way, but more like a, hey, you might have missed this. Mm-hmm. And that type of, very soft prodding so that we can clear up issues and reduce overdue invoices. The last part of that, I think, is the client engagement, where we do have a sales team based out of Delaware, and they are out there selling. And they're calling up newly funded Silicon Valley ventures saying, hey, you're in a regulated industry. Did you ever think about lobbying? And then they say, well, no, why don't I hire a lobbyist in D.C. or in this state or that state? That's the point where we can do a little bit of client development and make the referrals over to the lobbying firms to create those new engagements. We're trying to attract non-traditional lobbyists. This is a whole nother story, but ultimately, you know, a lot of firms out in Silicon Valley don't even have this idea or this concept of lobbying. If I hadn't had a friend who was formerly with the governor's office when I was telling him my problems about doing the lottery things, he said, you should go out and hire a lobbyist. And I was like, a lobbyist? What do they do? And that's how most of us out there in Silicon Valley think about it. And so we're now targeting that market more aggressively to develop this market as something that, you know, lobbyists can ultimately reap the benefits of. But we're also going out there and we're trying to show traditional clients a better way to do things as well. We have a few more things we bring to the table when it comes to that. One of the things is we've partnered with property management so that we can get discounted office space in all 50 state capitals. We partnered with Google to be able to bring discount services for things like email and for G Suite and things like that. In addition to a few other odds and ends, which should allow the lobbyists to get up and running and basically minimize the overhead they have every month, so that we kind of concentrate on the business side of things, mm-hmm. while the lobbyist concentrates on the lobbying side.
So when you're calling startups in Silicon Valley, mm-hmm. you're trying to convince them that they're going to need some government relations
yes.
professionals.
Yes.
And so they say to you, okay, you're right, we do. Then what do you do for them?
So we try to present it more unified white glove experience for them, where we say, look, this is who we are. This is my background. I deal with people like you, and I get you into places that you normally wouldn't be able to get. And I kind of from there walk them through the process of how they get in. And they say, oh, okay, now we want to, for example, launch in Connecticut.
Yeah.
And I say, well, the problem here is you have a regulatory issue, or you have a legislative issue that needs to be addressed. What you need now is boots on the ground. And at that point, we engage Jim, for example, to say, he's going to need to be the person in Connecticut that you're working with, and he's going to get you where you need to go. And Jim is part of the retained network, then kind of works through the platform from there.
Got it. Got it. When you're approaching these startups, at that point, you're almost more just an advisor.
Correct.
And the platform will come. And if it turns out that they need help, you're going to figure out where they need help. And then ultimately, they may end up on the platform. But in the beginning, it's more just figuring out what they need.
Right. I like to think of it as, in the IT world, we call it pre-sales consulting.
Okay.
And it's along those lines. But ultimately, they do need help. They just don't know
it yet. Silicon Valley always comes up with better ways to frame things. I like that. You know, we're just like, you're an advisor. You're like, no, Jim. We're not an advisor. We are in pre-sale. What is it?
Consulting.
Consulting.
Yes. I like
it. Pre-sale consulting. That is very interesting. And then in each state, will you have multiple firms that you work with?
Yes, we will. And right now we're trying to put a little bit of a formula to that, because we feel like if we bring in, you know, 30 lobbying firms in South Dakota, it may be overkill.
Right.
We want a little bit of exclusivity, but we also want the opportunity that
when we want different options, different right. firms specialized in maybe different areas.
You have conflicts, you have specializations.
Whatever. So maybe half a dozen firms or three firms in each state or three priority firms. Yeah. Okay. Very interesting. And then for the lobbying firms, you're offering, as you just walked through, so for any of the lobbying firms listening who don't like dealing with the billing issues with their clients, they could use the Echo Ridge platform today to sign up with you to have you help manage all that. And ultimately, you're going to be getting into more back office type operations like the Aspen Dental.
That's right. Well, I would say two of the other big issues that we're looking at right now is manpower for non-essential lobbying. And they're not lobbying staff. It's basically the back office staff, your admin, right. your secretary, that type of thing.
Right.
We want to kind of expand to there a bit so that we're able to provide those services and do so that you're not bringing on a W-2 employee.
Yep.
And then the second part of that is we're looking at group options for coverage like health insurance. So we've been working with the brokerage side of the insurance world, because you got to figure, if you have a lobbying firm with three partners, or even worse, if you're a sole practitioner, you're going to be paying the highest rates that come in terms of insurance, right?
Yes, indeed.
But if we can bring the entire retained network to table, which call it three lobbying firms with three partners each in 50 states and then federally, now we've got a sizable insurance pool that we can go out there and leverage for better cost savings. So we're trying to really run the back office ultimately and do so in a way. It's not a huge commitment for the lobbying firms. You become part of it if you want to be part of it. It's something that you don't have to do.
It's kind of the Aspen model for lobbying.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's very interesting. And of the different areas you've talked about in some of the firms that I'm thinking about that may be competitors, I don't know anyone that's doing the billing back office.
Right. It sounds boring, right, on the surface, but the ultimate.
But there's a lot of it.
That's right. And it needs to be done.
And it needs to be done, and no one likes to do it.
That's right. And I think the problem is, you know, that no one's just addressing the industry, and lobbying has been lobbying for the last 30 years without a lot of changes to it.
Right.
And so we can bring, you know, back office management to it and just make it easier. And the other thing is, too, it's like you hear this a lot. I read this, you know, from Aspen, actually, and they said a lot of dentists don't go into practice because they want to be dentists. They don't want to be business managers.
Right.
And taking away
that
burden.
They want to be helping people and fixing their problems.
Right. And I think a lot of lobbyists probably, you know, are along that same line. I had a friend recently who sold his lobbying practice to a much bigger lobbying concern and now is a director with that lobbying firm, but I don't know how much he likes that now, but certainly he doesn't have to handle the business side of things anymore.
He probably doesn't like it very much.
Yeah, I'm not going to, he's probably going to listen to this too, so I don't want to comment one
likes,
way or the other.
He likes the money he got, but he's not very happy going to work right now.
Right.
He's got new bosses and he's got to punch in and punch out.
Right.
There's a lot more going on at Echo Ridge than I knew. This has been very, very interesting. I think it'll be very interesting to sit down with you in 2 years and kind of see what is taking off more, what's kind of taking up more time, what didn't take off, and kind of what you look like. But with all the different aspects you have, it's very exciting.
Thank you. Thank you. And I do think that, you know, there's a lot going on, but ultimately it does all tie back together to the point where we're trying to bring lobbying to the mainstream. We're trying to elevate it and we're trying to make it something that is seen more as like a go-to option rather than something that's, oh, lobbying. We want to kind of bring it to, again, elevate it within people's consciousness.
Well, give every American better tools to petition their government.
Right.
I like that. Jeff, it's been great to sit down with you. Thanks for coming in.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right. Well, there it is. Jeff, thanks for coming by. It's great to sit down with him. Great to hear about Echo Ridge. You know, Jeff, really interesting with the different hats that he's worn. I think he's perfectly suited for his current job. I mean, he understands government relations. He understands business development. And he's actually done coding. So quite impressive. So there's the show. Don't forget to subscribe and rate our show wherever it is that you listen on Google, Apple, or Spotify. And you can also sign up for our Monday morning email, our Coffee with the Lobbying Show, at our website, thelobbyingshow.com. And you can also follow us on Twitter, at The Lobbying Show. And of course, we are also on Instagram and Facebook. Are we really on Instagram? Do we actually post anything on Instagram? Because I can't imagine there's any pictures from this that people want to actually look at. But you know, whatever. Maybe we are. I don't know. I keep saying it, so I hope we are. Anyways, so there is the show. Hope you all have a great week and see you next Monday.